now tuned in to the Pod Gods Network.
And make sure you head on over to podgodsnetwork.com and check out all 115 million shows we have available for your free consumption. They're all free, they're all funny, and they're all fucking Pod Gods. Go check them out. Podgodsnetwork.com, 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 podgodsnetwork.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jason Mewes is going to tell you about the Unsocial Network.
The Unsocial Network is a group of high school friends who are now in their early 30s and have finally decided to follow their dreams of making people laugh or grossing them out. Join your host, Chris, and his revolving cast of not-so-ready-for-internet podcasters, Ben, Pete, Matt, Coltrane, Sarah, as they talk unedited and uncensored about all the important things in life. Pop culture, current events, and giving their unique take on the latest pop viral videos.
Pop and poop culture are covered?
Yes. We'll want to chime in on a topic we were talking about. Play a game with us like Back to the Future trivia, 80s pop culture trivia, or participate in a game of Would You Rather or What If? Well, then join us through Skype. You can download, subscribe, and rate our podcast on iTunes or email us at theunsocialnetwork@hotmail.com.
You're listening to the Oddcast Podcast UK on the Pod Gods Network. The Oddcast Podcast, the podcast nobody.
Welcome to the Oddcast Podcast UK on the Pod Gods Network. Got a very special episode here today. I've got no Will, I've got no Ash, but I do have three great interviews with some awesome people in the film industry. This is a special podcast which is going to be talking about Rise and Fall of a White Collar Hooligan, a new British film which is coming out in cinemas and on DVD and on demand. Very, very soon. So today I've been talking to, I'm going to call them friends of the podcast, because Rita and Rebecca have both been on the show two or three times now. So technically that's friends. And we're going to also speak to the director and the writer, Paul Tanter, who I have right now listening in. Are you all right there, Paul?
Hello, mate. Yeah, very good. How's it going?
Yeah, not too bad. So what we're going to do, I'm going to chat to you in a second. We're going to play out the interviews that I did with Rita first, and then the one we did with Rebecca, and then we're going to come straight in and chat with you about the movie.
Oh, awesome. Cool.
Okay, so here we go.
Okay. I love this beautiful game. I love the team, the fans, and I love the winning. Being a hooligan isn't a matter of life and death.
Check the clock, yeah.
It's much more complicated than that.
Check your bench. Someone stop. No time. Back on my mind, I'll be working to a deadline. Trying to push a book in a loop up to a headline. You got my eyes on the clock. Tick the top, cut the clock. No time for that if I'm gonna make a jump. Walk on, make it with you. Chipping, stripping down his clock. Now took a sit up, now I'm singing rap. The dark art flow smart. Show hot if it blows, I'll make it mark. My prime beat the time, so I shift it from the start. Cause the hat's right for no man, already spinning. Gonna mount on my own plans, the line is thin. Never win, death wins. He's got my ticket ready, pick it, cocky, get to the digits. In a minute, check the clock, check your watch. Sat on stock, in time's a clutch. Put the toss, make it blast your mind. Only getting home down, but there's not enough time. But it's not enough time.
So, how did you get involved with White Collar Hooligan? What was the what part of the script really got you going?
I liked the fact that it was based on a true story. Like, it wasn't just, you know, it was a real life sort of hooligan story. So that really, like, that really appealed to me. And the character was really nice. Like, I often do play sort of like the nice girl, the sweet girl. So I wanted to stay true to what I did. And I really liked the scripts. And Paul Tanter wrote this one, and he's brilliant. And he did the Jack films, which I'd mentioned to you before. So the script was brilliant, and I really liked it. And to work with Nick Nevin, who's so underrated, I just really wanted to work with him again.
So what was it like working with Paul Tanter?
He's great. He's really nice. He's very, very easy to work with, and a really, really funny guy. Really, really funny. And you know, as a director, he's so amenable. You know, he's just you know, he tells it like it is, and he's really good and up and coming. I hope he directs more, because you know, he's very good. And you know, you can say to him, you know, does this look good, am I doing the right thing, and you know, he'll come up and have a chat to you. And yeah, he's very easy to work with.
Yeah, so with the whole story about White Collar Hooligan, it's got the hooligan sort of football hooliganism in it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Kind of, you know, very sort of Green Street type sort of, like, you know, football hooliganism thing running to it. So hopefully it will really sort of be appealing to anyone who is into football, because it has got a lot of that. The main character, Nick, you know, he is a football hooligan in the film, so I hope it sort of, like, you know, sparks interest with that. And with the football coming up this summer, you know, it will be a great time for the release.
I mean, this is a bit of a serious question on this part, and I don't know what you feel about it. When people will always ask with these sort of films, does it glamorise football hooliganism?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, you see, with this film in particular, you know, you see his downfall, and you see that, you know, things just don't work out for him. You know, he messes up his relationship with Katie. You know, money-wise, things go downhill, and you see him spiral down into this, you know, dark, dark world, and you know, he gets beaten up a lot, and he gets into a lot of trouble. So, you know, I don't think it glamorizes it at all. You know, obviously, you know, he goes to a lot of football matches, and that's, you know, the nice side of it. It's the other side after the football matches that things get really, really hairy, and things do become dangerous. And I think it's true to life. These things do happen, but in the film we show that, you know, it's not a good thing. You know, people do get killed, people do get hurt in more ways than one. So it's not about glamorising it, it's just about highlighting what is happening out there, and that it isn't a good thing, you know.
Mm. Well, you said it's based on kind of a true story, which kind of makes sense, because there is hooliganism out there, and it does sometimes lead to more crimes. Do you know what I mean? It's not just about hooliganism, it moves on to the next level, where it would go on to, like,
that's right,
robberies and burglaries, yes, and sort of your gangland crimes, because that's all hooliganism is, isn't it? And it's kind of like a gangland thing. It's not, you know, you wouldn't get one person on their own just go out there hooliganism and then go back to their day job and not be involved in nothing else. They exactly. do. It's like a gang, and that's kind of the gang mentality about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you get sort of caught up in that world, you know, you mix with those sort of people, you do get caught up in it, and you do think, yeah, this is good, I'm with a family and I'm standing up for what I believe in. But it's not, you know, it doesn't really mean anything. It's like, what really are you standing up for? You're just, you know, causing violence unnecessarily. So you know, and I think the film demonstrates that really well in this case, because Nick's character does go through a lot of ups and downs with this, and he lands himself into real trouble with it.
So is there ever like a key football team it's about? Because, you know, like in Football Factory, I think they have Chelsea as their main team, Green Street's West Ham. Has this one got a specific team, or is it just football in general?
it's football in general. I hope I'm right in saying that as well, because I wasn't part of sort of like the football side of it. But I think it was just football in general. So it doesn't even matter which team you support in terms of that. You know, football hooliganism is everywhere, yeah, really, regardless of which team you support, I think, yeah.
So your character, Katie, plays, you're the girlfriend of the main character.
Yes.
And are you kind of like the moral sort of standpoint in the film? Are you like what the, you're the nice girl? Is that be right in saying, or?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, yeah, she's a nice girl, and she's trying to get Nick's character to sort of like follow on the right path and get himself a job. And obviously he's very into his football, so he keeps coming up to his girlfriend, Katie, and saying, you know, look, please, I need some money to go football. And she gives him because she loves him and everything, so she's having to support him. But at the same time, I think that there comes a point where she breaks and she can't take it anymore, because he does get a job, he does start earning, but it's not in the normal way that you would expect a guy to earn money. Unfortunately, he mixes up with a bunch of people that, you know, aren't very nice, and he gets himself into trouble, and as a result he loses his girlfriend. But things do turn around for him, so I won't give too much away.
Right, well, it looks like a great film. I mean, I think the trailer looks great, and
it's a good trailer, isn't it?
It's really good. It's quite shows a bit of everything in the trailer, and it's like a lot of cut shots and that, and I think it's the sort of film that will do well. I've got a feeling it'll do well because of the subject matter and the predecessors that have come before it, and now, and just seeing it everywhere, I think it's going to have a good little online sort of promotion, even if it's from, not necessarily from people within the film, but from the fans.
I hope so. That'd be really good. I mean, it's, you know, we're not expecting this to be a huge blockbuster film, and, you know, it's not going to have like a massive cinema release, but you know, within the British film industry, we're really proud of this one, and I think I said to you before, we do this sort of, you know, Brits do this sort of type of film really, really well. You know, football hooliganism, gangster films, and so I think on the basis of that, this film could potentially do very well for itself, because we know what we're talking about, I think.
Yeah. It's like, if the British film industry knows what it's doing, so it must keep. It's no point trying to make too many films that people don't kind of adapt with. Whereas these sort of films, they know there's an audience for them.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, we like these type of films anyway. I think British public, you know, they like football. We've got a lot of football films. We've got a lot of gangster films, but we like it. You know, it's nice. It's not going to be huge, but it's going to be, you know, decent cast. You know, we've got great locations. We even filmed in Paris for this one, so you know, it looks good. So hopefully, I really hope people like this one.
Yeah, well, I think they will, and I'm looking forward to seeing your role in it. I'm looking forward to seeing Nick Nevin's role, because he's such an underrated actor, and I'm looking forward to seeing Rebecca Fernando's roles or certain scenes.
Oh, you'll have to let me know what you think of it. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh yeah, no doubt I will. I'm quite good at stuff there. I like my films, I like my British films, I like my gangster films, so I can't go sit there and watch them all day. Okay, so Rebecca, what is White Collar Hooligan, and who do you play in that film?
I play a fab character called Nicey Pricey, otherwise known as, her real name is Nicola Price. She is a bit of a naughty girl, to be fair. We don't know too much about her in the film. We just know that she gets involved in the wrong people and the wrong crowds, and she's always got somebody staying over at hers, put it that way. And she has this bit of a kind of love affair with Nick Nevin. And his character is Mike. And he plays the lead in this, and they have this really beautiful, sensitive moment where she says, you know, come on, Mike, it's not me that you love, it's not me that you want to run away to Spain with and be with for the rest of your life, it's Katie, it's Katie that's played by Rita Ramani, and she's quite honest, this girl, you know, and she's very, very real, and he sort of loves her for that, you know, and he kind of thanks her for pointing him in the right direction, because I think he needs that. And yeah, they have this really beautiful moment, which is lovely. I'm looking forward to seeing that, as well as all the crazy moments of the drugs and the violence and all the rest of it that's in the film. So yeah.
So the film's got quite a good cast list, quite a big names in it. Obviously Nick Nevin, which I kept calling Nick Nevin in a previous podcast by accident, because I didn't know what his name was.
He gets really wound up by that. It's Nick Nevin.
He did. He pulled me up on Twitter on it. He said, yeah. So I was like, okay, yeah, sorry, mate. You got Billy Murray's in it. Billy Murray's in it.
Yeah.
You got yourself, Rita Ramnani, Nick Nevin, obviously, and it's directed by Paul Tanter.
Yeah, brilliant, Paul Tanter.
What was it like working with him?
Great, you know, I mean, when I found out it was directed by the guy that directed the Jack trilogy, it was a massive yes for me to work on this film. And the thing is, I knew that Rita was in it, because I had a chat with Simon, because it was Simon that called me and offered me the part. And I had no idea that he had married Rita, and I actually went to youth theatre with Rita years ago, so we knew each other way back, so I knew what a fantastic actress she was, and I kind of knew if she's involved in it, then it would be good. And obviously Paul Tanter directing. And then they sort of started to name the cast, Billy Murray and Ricky Hartnett and Peter Barrett. And then they said this name called Nick Nevin, who I didn't know too much about. When I got to a film set, we just literally just kind of really got on, literally from the get-go, from the very moment that we kind of met and worked together, we just laughed and had fun. And I think it's incredibly important when you're playing a character that I did to feel comfortable. You know, some of the scenes are quite graphic and quite real, and I think to feel comfortable in those moments is incredibly important. And Nick was superb at making me feel like that. So yeah, all credit to him and the cast. And it was a nice small set, which I think helps in those kind of environments as well. And Paul Tanter, yeah, amazing director. And you know, I've spent a few hours actually talking to him on the phone, and we can literally talk about anything from Family Guy to the latest movies that are out. So yeah, brilliant, really, really cool.
So I've seen the trailer, obviously, and there's a lot of like cut shots in the trailer. You know, it's a lot of like voiceover and random bits that it doesn't show too much. It just shows you snippets. But there is one scene. Have you seen the trailer?
Oh, go on.
You're in the trailer, aren't you?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thought so. So it does go.
Yes, that's me.
There is one
that's
bit.
Me on top of the roof. Yes. That's me.
I think I don't need to say much. I just need people to go and watch the trailer, really, then they will notice it. because I know what you look like. And when I was watching it, and I saw you in the bar, I was like, oh, there's Rebecca. And then there's a quick scene after that. I was like, oh.
Yeah, there's Rebecca. She looks really nice. Oh. What is she doing now? Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But can I just say, like, also, I'm clearly not doing that on my own, so I hope he's mentioned the same thing to Nick Niven. No, I bet you didn't. It's always the girl that gets the stick. Always the girl that gets the stick. That needs to change.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
It was a great thing. When people say, who's Rebecca Ferdinand then you're going to chat to? And I show them the trailer and they're like, which one's she then? I was like, guess. Ooh.
Well, hold on. I think there's a big one female in the trailer, isn't there? I think it's me.
I'm gonna have to go back and watch it again. Because there's a lot of blokey sort of atmosphere in that trailer, like all that stuff. So that's
what it's about at the end of the day, and that's the demographic of people that's going to go and see it. I think it works. I think it's great. I think it's everything that the title says it is.
Yeah, exactly. So it should be definitely a good film. Is it a sort of film that you would have usually have gone to go for that part?
I like to play all different parts, all different kind of characters. I think I've played a lot of those characters, and so people kind of, if there is a character in their film, you know, that's similar to, you know, girlfriend of the, I don't know, whatever type character, that they do tend to call me up and say, oh, Bex can play that part. which is nice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, for me as an actress, I like to play all different parts, so I'm looking forward to kind of doing different stuff this year and next year. So, yeah.
Well, at least they know they can trust you to smash this part, so...
Hopefully.
That's good. Okay, well thanks for talking to me about White Collar Hooligan. Hopefully when it comes out, people will enjoy your scenes and enjoy your character.
I'm sure they will. I actually like Nicey Pricey. I think she's great. I think she's fun, and I think she's got a heart. So, you know, I think hopefully I won't be hated by girls.
How does she talk in this film?
Oh no, she's I'd say she's probably very Essex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Proper Essex.
More Essex. Not like Outside Bet, which is a bit softer. She's, you know, a girly girl, but no, she's tough. Bit more like the Bonded by Blood character, I would say.
Which is a great scene in that film as well.
There you go, yeah. So she's very similar to that kind of character, Mary in Bonded by Blood. But she's different because I think she's got a real heart, and you see that in one particular scene. And that's the one that I'm looking forward to seeing most, I think, film.
I'm looking forward to seeing this film, and
I'm also looking forward to seeing the difference between Katie and Nicey Pricey, because I think there's going to be quite a massive difference of the two females in the film. So
yeah,
there you go. Yeah, exciting.
Good plot. Good plot narrative there going on with the two characters. Yeah.
Don't think you can go wrong with Nick Nevin.
Not Nick Niven, Nick Nevin. So here is the chat on the podcast with writer and director Paul Santa. How are you doing, Paul? You good?
Yeah, very good, mate. Very good. Yeah, awesome to be on the show. Thank you very much.
Yeah, not a problem, not a problem. So, Paul, tell everybody what White Collar Hooligan is.
White Collar Hooligan is basically, it's a mob story. It's about a bloke, he's sort of an everyman, called Mike. He's sort of hard up on his luck, you know, he's having a bit of trouble finding work. And in his spare time, he goes to football, he's a bit of a football hooligan. And he sort of gets involved by an old friend Eddie in a sort of organisation that he doesn't really know much about to begin with. But he sort of joins to the bottom and is sort of kept in the dark. And as time goes on, he sort of proves his trustworthiness. He rises up and eventually finds out that He's actually part of a big credit card fraud organization that rips off cash machines for large sums of money. And he basically rises up through the ranks of it, really. And it's all about his, not to sort of comment on too much, but his rise and fall, sort of rise to grace and then his fall from there as well. It's kind of that story of what would you do if you're in that situation, if you're presented with the temptation to take the easy way and get a lot of money and all the sort of trappings of wealth and it's all, the consequences of that on his life and on those around him and the sort of the temptations that are before him, really. It's got a backdrop of football hooliganism. He's not your sort of typical everyday guy. He's a bit of a tearaway, but at his centre, he's got a heart. He is a good guy, and hopefully, people sort of identify with him and sort of look at it and think, could that have been me in that situation? Possibly. Credit card fraud is sort of a modern thing. It's nice to do a story, I think, that isn't always based around drugs or something like that. I don't know of any other films that have done credit card fraud as a main sort of premise for their criminal organisation or their story. So I'm hoping we're sort of doing something a bit new there. That's kind of what the film is in a nutshell, really.
All right. It's based on a true story, yeah?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's based on a guy called Ray. I think that's his name. That's what I've been told his name was when I met him. He's now actually in the Witness Protection Program. I was introduced to him by a producer who sort of said that, this guy might be good to chat to for an idea for a film. And I sat down with him and he told me all about his life and sort of the story that, the journey that he'd gone through. And it was actually very similar, the films. And, we add things for dramatic effect and we tweak things and, that kind of thing. But a lot of the incidents in the film actually did happen to Ray, and he's now living his life on a witness protection program. Could never go back to his home, see his friends, his family. Because he rose through the ranks of an organization. He spent a bit of time inside for what he did. He came out and he sort of got rewarded for keeping his mouth shut by his bosses and went a bit further up and ultimately everything went tits up. I suppose the good times can't last forever.
Yeah.
And it ended up with him very nearly getting killed by some other sort of nefarious characters. And in the end, he was kind of presented with no choice by the police. It's either to testify or die, really. And so he chose to testify.
Yeah.
And so a lot of his old pals went down for a long time, and he's now living in witness protection. So yeah, it's all very much based upon a true story. There's a few little touches that, sort of thrown in there for dramatic license, but a lot of it is pretty much true to life,
Yeah, I mean, you put this film together, like you said, you wrote it yourself. Did you have any help writing it, or are you one of the people that will sit down with the idea and just thrash it out?
For the early drafts, I'm very much a sort of sit down by myself and do it kind of person. I mean, I had sort of the skeleton, the bare bones of the idea of the story from Ray to base it on. But I mean, like when it comes to writing it, I'm very, I tend to do stuff by myself, but I've got a very good working relationship with the producer, Simon Phillips, who also plays Eddie in the film. He's a great actor. And
plays,
Eddie, the sort of, the second lead for Nick Nevin's Mike. And me and him have worked together on, quite a lot of films now. And I've got a very good process with him where, I'll do a couple of first drafts, then we kind of bounce it back and forth. And, he's very good at sort of spotting what, what a script needs and what needs to be added and what needs to be taken away and that kind of thing. So, after the first couple of drafts, we kind of bounce them back and forth. And at that point, we kind of reach, we reach somewhere near the shooting draft that we ended up making. Yeah, so that tends to be my process. So sort of by myself to begin with, and then sort of get that input, script editorial-wise.
So, with Simon Phillips, he plays Eddie, and he's the producer of the film as well.
Yeah.
How did this film get made? Like, what's the process in getting this film? We'll start from the script now, right? And we'll move up into casting, and then we'll go into the movie. So, how did it go from, now you and Simon have sat down, you've got the script ready, what do you do next?
Okay, well, you got the script, you need money to make a film, so you can fund it via, usually either through, you get private investment from people, who, you know, essentially buy shares in the film a bit like as if they were if they're putting money into a business.
Yep.
Or if you've got people you know at various companies, you can do a pre-sale here or pre-sale there in various territories. So you might be able to pre-sale the DVD rights for England or Australia or Germany or something like that. So you can get it that way. You can usually do that if you've got a bit of history behind you, you know, showing that you are capable of churning out films, you know, but we're kind of like we are, or we have. But, you know, it tends to be kind of like, you know, through pre-sales or private investments, you get a bit of money together. Then you go into your casting, you know, you're convinced at the same time, so you send it off to the people that you want to get, or you send it to their agents. And, you know, in some cases, it's people you know or you've worked with before. In some cases, it's people you want to work with, so you go to their agents and send them the script and say, look, we'd really like them to play this role, you know, if they're free around this time. And then once the cars start coming on, then you crew up for it, and then, you know, before you know it, you sort of, you know, you're looking at your first day of shooting, and that's when it all sort of, you know, that's when it all becomes real, when you're there on set for the first day, and you've got, you know, the actors that you wanted, and you're in your location, and you're shooting it. So, no, it's, I mean, like, I've kind of given a really condensed version there. There's so many different things that are required, and the people don't realise that, you know, that needed. There's so much organisation and stuff that's needed, you know. And, you know, a lot of that does come from your producers and a lot of that comes from your crew as well. So it's like a team effort. A lot of people do a lot of things in a short period to kind of make a lot of things happen very quickly. We always tend to have quite a quick turnaround with that film, which is why we sort of, you know, why we're able to make so many so quickly, really.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the production of the sort of the films you're making, because obviously you did the Jack trilogy with the same sort of people, so you're obviously working together in a close unit, and obviously everybody's got work and that. So getting the actors on must have been quite easy to kind of direct them, because you knew them, you knew what they were capable of, and you knew how to get the best performance out of them.
There's actors in White Collar Hooligan that I've worked with, you know, several times before, like Simon Phillips. You know, I've worked with him a lot, and I know him as a very good actor. You know, he's a great producer and a great actor. Rita Ramnani, who plays Katie in the film, worked with her, you know, quite a lot. And I love working with her. You know, she's someone who sort of, you know, I kind of own, you know, my sort of getting into film group too. So, and she's always a great actress as well, so it's always a pleasure working with her. Peter Barrett, who first met on Jack Falls, you know, done a few films together now. He's sort of become one of our regulars. So we sort of have like a bit of a close knit, you know, group of people that we sort of tend to come back to. But at the same time, you know, we always try and like add new people to that. So, Ricky Harnett, who, you know, a lot of people probably know best as the lead in Rise of the Foot Soldier and as a supporting actor in a few other films like 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate to get him on this. First time I've ever worked with him. Big fan of him, of course, from Rise of the Foot Soldier. And we offered him a part. I think it was the first time we've been offered a policeman to play. and he went for it. So you always try and get the people that, you know, you'd like to work with, you know, try and get them in for something and sort of try and get to know them through that. I mean, I've been in a film at the moment called Feral, which is a sort of Essex Boys story. First time I got to work with Kirsten Waring, who, you know, I've always been a huge fan of, and again, it's something, you know, I've got Simon in that, and Nick in that, and Pete in that, so I've got, like, you know, a sort of core people that I often like to work with, but again, it's always good to kind of, like, expand that and bring new people in. So what I've got at Hooligan, you know, we've got Rebecca. I've never worked with Rebecca before, but she came in, was absolutely fantastic, you know, she plays it smart and sexy and, you know, very believable, and someone I hope to work with again. And other people as well, Billy Murray, great in that. It's always good to try like mix things up and, you know, do a mixture of dependable people that you've used before and people that you're a fan of or that you admire their work and you want to work with again.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you invited me last night to the screening, the private screening, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, I'm a big fan of the kind of gangster British underground films. I mean, I've watched, I haven't watched Jack Falls yet, but I've watched Jack Said and Jack Says.
I'm glad you watched them, but they get better as they go on. So like, I'm very proud of the first one, I'm very proud of the second one, and Jack Portman, but I'm most proud about the three, because I think we kind of got better in quality.
Yeah.
As, you know, we kind of got better in, you know, in terms of my writing and in terms of performances and in terms of production value. So, you know, we kind of went from one, two, and three was just kind of like improvement upon improvement upon improvement. And so Jack Paul, like, you know, I really hope you enjoy it when you watch it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's quite different in style to the other two. I mean, I don't know if you know, but, you know, the films were kind of based on, well, not based on, but the first one existed, and then I did a graphic novel for a prequel, and that was the basis for the next film, and then maybe another graphic novel, and so forth. And so for Jack Falls, we kind of went with the idea of, we'll try and make a graphic novel film. You know, kind of a bit like the Sin City films did, but, you know, obviously we're on a fraction of the budget. But I like to think we sort of punched above our weight with that, and you know, I was very proud of what we achieved with that. You know, it was sort of, you know, as I say, it was the filming version of the graphic novel, I think. And it's something, you know, we still look back on very proudly and fondly. So, you know, when you watch it, I really hope you enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to check it out. I mean, because I was like, when I heard about this, when I spoke to Rita and Rebecca before, and they told me about White Collar Hooligan coming about, I was like, okay, that sounds interesting, because I enjoyed, obviously, Football Factory, I enjoy Green Street, I enjoy Rise of the Foot Soldiers, all these films that were coming out, like, saying it's going to be like this film. I was like, well, it's in the sort of genre I like. And, you know, like Essex Boys, and like you said, you're doing a film based on the Range Rover murders soon, aren't you?
That's right. Yeah.
So things like that is what I find interesting, especially because it's close. Because obviously I'm Chelmsford, Essex, so, you know, it's close by. But watching it last night, I was watching it and I was... The tone of the movie was spot on. Especially the beginning, when it was kind of... The tone moves... This is how I looked at it. The tone of the movie shifts when the character shifts. So at the beginning, he's a bit naive. He's, like you said, he's just a hooligan. So it's almost comical.
Yeah.
And then as it goes on, it moves into the whole, it gets darker and deeper, and then the tone sort of shifts a bit. And that's what I like, is that you went with the journey. You never hate the character.
Yeah.
You always sympathise with the characters and that. And the chemistry of the two mains, Eddie and Mikey, were perfect. Whereas Nick Nevin was brilliant in that role.
Well, I mean, like, Nick is he's a great actor and, you know, really underrated, I think, as well. But, you know, by people in the industry. And, like, yeah, and he's an awesome lead. And, you know, and him as Mike and Simon as Eddie. Yeah, I mean, I've got to say, you know, I've worked with Simon, so, you know, many times before. And I've worked with Nick many times since, and I really enjoy working with them both. They, you know, they have great chemistry together, and they played those roles so well. Mm. And I think you're right when you say that, you know, he's never unlikable, and I think that applies to both of them. I think they're both never unlikable. You know, they're people who do, in some instances, unlikable things, but you can tell at their essence they've got a heart. You know, Mike especially. I think also you're right about we are kind of going on a journey. The journey with him is, you know, the rise and fall. And yeah, you know, it was important to make him likable, because, you know, if he was someone that we didn't identify with, then we'd lose people straight away. So, you know, at the beginning, you can see that he's trying, and there is a bit of humour there, you know, hopefully to sort of soften him a little bit.
Yeah.
And then as he gets sucked into it, the good times start to happen and the risks increase. And things get a little bit more serious. And at that point, you know, that's when, you know, his old life starts to drift away. You know, also in the case of, you know, old relationships, you know, and, you know, you move on to new things and certain things are attractive, be they people or wealth or drugs or, you know, just the whole lifestyle and excitement. And at that point, you know, you haven't got time for the other things, or you lose sort of patience with them, or they kind of lose patience with you, you know. I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, like, if you, you know, people who get involved with that kind of thing, you know, very often it's not they who leave their families or their loved ones, but it's the other way around, and they end up sort of, finding the door shut in their own face, and wondering why that happened, not realising that what they're doing and the life they're living is actually sort of the reason for it, and the reason why they change it, because often they don't see the change happening to themselves, so, to people around them that see this happening to them. But yeah, to go back to Simon Nick, you know, yeah, like, I really, really enjoyed Simon's performance in this film. You know, I mean, like, for one thing, it helps that I know him so well. So, like, For me now, he's kind of easy to write for. Like, as I was writing Eddie, I knew it was going to be Simon playing him. So, you know, it was easy to kind of match him almost to Simon's, you know, to suit Simon's manners and that kind of thing. Excuse me. So that was absolutely a joy to write. And Nick, you know, as I say, very underrated actor, you know, really good in, you know, he's done Terry last year, Strippers vs. Werewolves. Yeah. He's got a lot of stuff coming up. And I do think, you know, he's... I honestly think he's one to watch, you know, in the next couple of years. I think he's going to make it very big. I really do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if my girlfriend came out and she said, that guy, he looks like he could be really big soon. He's got that presence about him.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even when he walked in the screening, when we were just sort of mingling about at the beginning, it's like, he just sort of had that thing about him, and he walked in, and not my girlfriend, she went, so who's that again? And I said, that's the main lead, that's Nick. And she was like, yeah. He looks like the lead. I was like, well, there you go. So he's doing something right.
He has something about it, doesn't he? Nick has a sort of certain X factor, you know, sort of certain a certain sort of charm about him. But you know, when he comes into a room, people do notice. You know, and it's not just the fact that he was the only one wearing a tracksuit in a room full of suits. You know, it's the fact that you know, he does sort of exude a certain confidence, which people do sort of pick up on. You know, and I think it's part of that. You know, it's part of one of those sort of indefinable things. You can't quite put your finger on it. But you know that someone like that is someone to watch, and they will go a long way. And yeah, Nick is definitely like that. And you know, just as I say, really good actor. Yeah.
I mean, it was he got some like comedic moments down. I mean, the bits of the beginning when he was trying to find a job, and the interviews section, that was hilarious. I loved that bit.
I'm glad you liked that.
That was a great little bit to put in.
Yeah, oh, no, I'm glad. I'm really pleased with that little sequence. You know, we did. I mean, like we shot a few more that we did. You know, we decided to try and sort of leave in. You know, what we felt were just the best bits. And I wrote a few more actually that we never got around to filming. But yeah, you know, I've got to say, you know, fair play to Nick. Some of that was scripted, and some of that he sort of threw in little bits. And yeah, there was some really enjoyable bits in there. You know, it kind of showed that. You know. Hopefully, you know, it wasn't showing that the character was, you know, some sort of buffoon, but, you know, it showed that he was trying, but, you know, at the same time, you know, it was kind of done a little bit tongue-in-cheek, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think, that, you know, that sequence of it was very important for us, just to kind of, you know, to sort of relax people around him. Because, bear in mind, your first introduction to him is in, you know, he's meeting someone in a football riot. So that's not typically the way you're going to, you know, that's not going to endear a character to an audience. So, you know, for us it was important to have that, and Nick played it very well. You know, I think he's probably got a future in comedy as well as serious stuff, you know, based on that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, he can switch it on and off, which I think was good. How hard was it to film the riot scenes?
I mean, like, you know, logistically, you know, you've got sort of 100-150 extras. I mean, that, the right stuff we actually shot, we didn't shoot it in a street, we had a studio backlot that we hired for the day, and we got, a 100 or so extras in for that, and I mean, it's challenging, especially if you haven't got a megaphone. As soon as you call action, and they start running at each other, and they're screaming, they can't hear you call cut, so like you're yelling, and you want everything to stop, and just keep on, you know, they can carry on running at each other and stuff, but... I tell you what, it was a lot of fun. All those guys who came down for the, you know, for that day, they were great. You know, they were so eager to get stuck in and be a part of it. And you know, and I think we got a lot of we got a lot of good value out of it. You know, fair play to them all. They really gave it their best, and you could really see it. And I think I think they had a lot of fun as well. You know, we're handing out rubber bricks and fake mallets, baseball bats and that kind of thing, and telling them to lob them at each other. Getting the police driving in there and the whole crowd scatters and. You know, it's a lot of fun, to sort of to play with that side of yourself, sort of to pretend to be the thug but to not actually, you know, hurt anyone and get hurt. And so, you know, I think they all had a lot of fun with that. I hope they did anyway. I certainly enjoyed it. Logistically, you know, it's a bit of an ask, you know, you get a lot of, you know, you've got a lot of crew having to coordinate people and so forth. But, you know, the juice was worth the squeeze on that day when we were filming. I thought, yeah, it was, was enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the set pieces in the movie is, like you said, there's violence, isn't it, in it, and like I said, they've got the riot scenes and that. I mean, it always looks like the violent scenes are quite violent without pushing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was, I tried to do, two things. One is that, if something in life hurts, you show that it hurts. You know, like in a lot of times in TV and film, someone gets hit by something and they're back up a minute later. And in reality, that doesn't happen, so for one thing, I try to show that, these things do hurt and they do have a consequence. But the other thing is, this was a conscious thing in White Girl Who, not to linger on it too long. You know, there was no need or no reason to, make anything, I don't want to say sadistic, but just to sort of linger on anything violent.
Yeah.
I think any time anything violent happened, it happened, but, you almost, in some cases you don't see it, it happens off camera, but you feel like you're seeing it because of the actor's reaction, or because of, the camera movement or something like that. In other cases, when you do see it, we don't linger on it. You know, we're not making a feature of the violence. That was kind of a conscious decision, and I hope it worked. It's funny, actually, you're not the first person to point that out, so I'm glad that sort of, been noticed,
Yeah.
I hope that stylistically it kind of works with the film,
Yeah, because some people would go that they want to show the violence just to get a reaction, which you don't, they call it the Reservoir Dog sort of thing, where people go on about the ear cutting sequence, but if you actually watch the film,
you never see it.
But people have got it in their heads that they have seen it, and you think you haven't seen it.
Exactly.
So
I
think that works better along that lines.
Definitely. You can often trick the brain with clever sound design and with good performance from an actor, and often just with what we're showing them. So that's a great example. It's the Reservoir Dogs thing. People think that they saw someone getting their ear cut off, and actually what you saw was an empty room and you heard the screams from it.
Yeah.
But you come away thinking that it's something different. And I've heard that in the soaps actually before as well. I remember EastEnders, I think. I don't watch EastEnders much anymore, but a few years ago they got a lot of complaints when Bill Mitchell beat up the nephew, who was called Jamie, I think. I got a lot of complaints, but you never actually saw it.
Yeah.
You saw someone's face looking down at someone they were kicking, but you didn't see the person who was being kicked, but you felt the violence because you could hear the thuds and you could see the rage on someone's face. And I think if you can kind of convey that, that violence or so forth without showing it, then hopefully, as a filmmaker or as a, going that phrase with storyteller or whatever, then you're kind of doing something right and you're doing something well, I hope anyway.
Yeah, I mean, what sort of demographic do you reckon this film is aimed at? I mean, if you had to pick a group of films that people have enjoyed before that will definitely enjoy this, what are you aiming for? What surprises do you reckon it would give to people?
Well, I mean, I won't dress it up. I think, we're quite obviously, going for the sort of 18 to 30 crowd, the kind of guys who would like Football Factory, Green Street, Buzz the Foot Soldier, Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels, that kind of thing. That's kind of like where we've aimed it with the market anyway, and probably where the advertising is going to go as well, I would guess. I hope that there's something in there also for people who, enjoy, not exactly those kind of films, I realise this may be a sort of biased opinion, but, my girlfriend seemed to enjoy it and found sort of something in it for her. And those kind of films are not really that kind of thing. And, I've had other friends at screenings who, again, wouldn't necessarily be into kind of Wandered by Blood or, Essex Woods type film, but come away from it really enjoying it, we do lean on in some aspects the football hooliganism, angle, but on the other hand, it's a story about a guy who gets sucked into a world he doesn't fully understand, and it kind of gets the better of him and spits him out the other side, and that is a story that, has been you know, seen before and really enjoyed in other films such as like The Business with Danny Dyer, you know, or Wall Street, or, you know, and various other things, you know. In some ways, it's a classic tale. It's a film about, you know, a guy making choices, in some cases good, in some cases bad, and how they affect the, you know, the relationships with those around him and those he's friends with and those he loves. So, you know, in some way, I hope that kind of transcends, you know, what people just see as, oh, that's just a genre film, it's just a football hooligan film, it's just a credit card fraud film, you know, that kind of thing. Hopefully, you know, hopefully there's something a bit extra in there for people. But I would say, you know, in terms of demographic, you know, the distributor is going to aim it at probably guys who read Nuts and Zoo and, you know, enjoy football. You know, it's the rise and fall of what for the hooligan. If I was a distributor and I had a film called that, that's who I'd aim at. So,
yeah. I mean, where can you see this film? I mean, you know, bearing in mind there's people listening like in America right now to this podcast. Okay. Is there any way they can get it? Is there any plans to get it outside of the UK?
Yeah, there is. Well, I mean, at the moment, the release coming up is it's being released on Friday 22nd of June, at the Empire Square, London, for a week. It's getting a theatrical release there. And then it's getting a nationwide DVD release on the 2nd of July.
Okay.
In all the sort of regular places you can get it and online. There will be an American release. There isn't one with a definite date set yet. But there will be, you know, it will get a US distribution at some point. So, for anyone listening in America, no, there's no legal way, to see the film. I'm sure within a day of it being out that there'll be some illegal ways, because that always tends to happen. But if you can be patient and try and wait for it to come out DVD, I'm sure it will get some kind of release in the US within, you know, the next 6 months or so. But, you know, I wouldn't know what the exact date on that would be. But yeah, you know, the plan is always to get a release in North America and, you know, Australia, New Zealand, and Germany and so forth. I know that there's a German release, so they've already done the artwork for it and done a dubbing for the German language version.
Oh, right.
Which I think it's going to release a sort of month or two after release here. So it's going to, I don't think in Germany, but not definite plans for, you know, not definite dates for the US, but it will be at some point. But don't download it illegally, okay? Buy it from Amazon. And play it on a multi-region DVD player. There you go. There's a legal way to do it.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the sort of film I think that could easily get out of the country and appeal to other audiences. Because like you said, it's, you know, it's a very British film, but it's got like a universal story. So it's not too niche that other cultures won't understand it. I mean, I found that some films, like, I think Lock, Stock struggled abroad because of the constant Cockney talk, whereas Snatch, when they upped it an ante and made it a bit more open, it did really well. So I think this sort of falls into the whole category of, like, you know, you will understand the storyline without it being too British, but it has a key element of Britishness to it.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, like, you know, obviously football backdrop is a very British thing. But yeah, at the heart, you know, as I say, there is that sort of classic story of, you know, guy gets sucked into the world, you know, it's seduced by money and power and women and so forth, and ultimately, you know, it goes along for the ride and it sort of spits him out at the other end, leaving him sort of slightly bruised, but maybe a little bit wiser for it. And that's a, you know, that's a story that goes back hundreds of years. And you can see in all cultures, in all countries, and in films and various literatures, you know, there's nothing sort of specifically British about that. You know, it is set against a sort of British backdrop, but I don't think it's anything. There's nothing there that I think would alienate people.
Hmm.
I don't think anyway. We're not sort of aiming for that. You know, as you say, I think Lockstock was a good example. You know, that was, you know, specifically British and very specifically sort of, almost, you know, wannabe Cockney British, not wannabe, but, you know, it was, you know, it sort of planted its flag in that, you know, Cockney line slang type which we don't try and we don't try and hate that. We try and do our own thing. But yeah, as I say, I kind of hope that there is something there that would appeal to any audience, be they UK or Europe or international.
I mean, so I liked the film. I really liked the film. I enjoyed it. I think you could pat yourself on the back. I think you've done a really good job. And I don't mean to sound patronising or anything, but I think the whole cast and crew was spot on with this film. And, I've heard Rita and Rebecca and Nick, they've all tweeted out that, they're not just saying this, but the film is, they're really pleased with it. So, and I think everyone's genuinely happy with the results of this film. And the producer said last night when you two got up, he said obviously some people can go in with low expectations due to the title, but I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. And I think that's what you're going to get off a lot of people. I think this film will literally surprise people how great, how good it is, and how different.
Well, yeah, I hope so. And there's nothing wrong with lowering expectations of the title, because then they can only be pleased afterwards. You're right, Reese and Rebecca and Nick and other people who have seen it, have all kind of come away and said it's that thing of saying that they've enjoyed it, but when you look at their face you seem to think I think you may actually be telling the truth there. I'm in no way trying to sort of blow my own trumpet or anything like that, but when we were at the screening, I was watching it and I was enjoying it in a way that I hadn't before. Not that I hadn't enjoyed it before, but before this, the biggest screen I'd seen it on was probably a 40-inch screen when we were doing the sound mix. Apart from that, I watched it on my laptop.
Yeah.
And I'm sat there watching it on a cinema screen, and I'm thinking, God, this has actually transferred really well to the big screen. It looks great. A lot of that down to Hayley Safar, who just shoots absolutely beautiful pictures. But also, watching it, we were sat there with the surround sound mix going around us. I'm noticing all these things, all the sounds in the mix that I had previously kind of either not noticed or taken for granted. It kind of gave me appreciation for all the stuff that the sound they add later on, that maybe if you watch at home with crap speakers on your laptop, you don't notice this. And then you're sat there in the cinema going, you know what? When his handcuffs hit the table, I swear when we shot that, they didn't make a noise, but I just heard them go clink, clink, clink. And then you think, oh my God. So, that's what the sound, so that's why the sound guys, in the studio all the time, because they're literally just adding all these little bits that, if you watch at home with your laptop on low, you don't notice, but then you're there in the cinema going, oh my God, this is just so rich with sound. And as I say, I thought it looked great, often, films that are made for a certain budget, you blow them up to big size on a big screen and they can end up looking a bit cheap. But I actually came away from thinking, I came away going, oh my God, it's like a real film. It's amazing. I was really pleased and I'm very proud of it. And, I know everyone else who's kind of worked on it is as well. And I think as they should be, I'm sure it will get some kind of kicking from some critics or whatever, because there's always people who don't like low budget films or films that have a certain criminal or London crime or football hooligan angle or something like that. But I'm very pleased with what we made, and I know the other guys are as well. I'm just very proud of it. Yeah,
I think it's a good film to show off the British industry, film industry is actually starting to thrive a bit more now. Do you know what I mean? It was struggling a good few years ago, and I think, but now it's starting to kickstart itself and start doing well. And I think that film proved it. I mean, the Jack trilogy, obviously, with you, helped you sort of improve and get the gist of it. And hopefully, then you've taken that onto this film, and then you've got other films in the line, coming up, and then you can get them all improving that, and then it's just it's a journey that you're going on that you're enjoying, and it's obviously working and paying off.
I mean, our attention, our process has always been try and do something a little bit different each time, and just try and get a little bit bigger and a little bit better and learn from previous mistakes and improve, you know. And I think and I hope that we've now kind of hit our stride, really. You know, as you say, we did, you know, the Jack stuff and then one called a hooligan, you know, and so, what is out this week, but since then, we've made, you know, we shot two other films, one of which I directed and one of which Simon directed. And we're now on another one, which is the one, you know, the Essence Voice one, Beryl, at the moment. So, you know, we're kind of, you know, hopefully we're at this point now where, you know, we're proficient at what we do and, people can see that we do make, something that's, you know, not only enjoyable, and well produced, but also, is commercially viable, you know, which I think is very important, actually. I think people often, can sort of forget that aspect, you know, there's one thing we try and make films that people enjoy and that are well performed and that anyone can kind of sit down and watch, but also will hopefully have some kind of good sales potential as well.
Yes. All right. So, I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to a lot of your future stuff. From you, Rita, Rebecca, Nick, Simon. It's like a little family now. So, I kind of can look around and, you know, I can definitely keep tabs on what your up and coming projects are, and definitely keep an eye out on them, and try and talk about them a lot on the podcast, and try and get the word out there a bit more, and, you know, do best I can to get people in the know. And support it. That's the main thing, really, supporting it.
Thank you very much. I mean, it's hugely appreciated. And, you know, like when you're making films at our sort of our budget level and our level of filmmaking, you know, you need kind of like all the support you can get. So, like, you know, believe me, it's hugely appreciated you getting behind us and getting the word out there.
Yeah, no problem. All right then, Paul, I'm going to let you go. This has been the Oddcast podcast. You've been listening to me, Adam. You also heard Rita and Rebecca earlier. You just heard from Paul Tanzer. Do you want to plug anything, Paul, like your Twitter or anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're so inclined, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. It's just at Paul Tanzer, Paul Tanzer, C-A-N-T-E-R. Most of my tweets are just sort of retweets of Nevins and Rita's and Simon plugging the films, but I occasionally try and write something new on there. So, yeah, if you're on Twitter, just follow me on there. But also, have a look on Twitter and on Facebook for the film's pages as well. You've got Rise and Fall of White Collar Hooligan and the film Briar, directed by Simon, coming out later on the year, and The Hooligan Wars, which is one that I did, and then we're also doing Feral, which may have a title change to Once Upon a Time in Essex. So keep an eye out for those, and thank you very much for your support.
That's right. Okay, and then obviously you can follow me at Barker Podcast and at the Oddcast Podcast. Go to oddpoduk.wordpress.com, and more importantly, go to the Pod Gods Network, where you'll listen to us and lots of other podcasts, including my other one, It's Not Soccer Podcast, Pod God Damn It, and lots more. Okay, so I hope you've enjoyed this, and I hope you're going to go and watch White Collar Hooligan, The Rise and Fall of a White Collar Hooligan. Get it on Amazon. It's out on the 2nd of July. Amazon. And if you're in America, surely you've got a multi-region DVD, so you can get it. Don't do it illegally. Tell them, Paul, not illegal.
Do not do it illegally, okay? Right, yeah. Just go Amazon.co.uk, get a multi-region DVD player, and order it over. You'll love it. There's DVD commentary that me, Nick, Simon and Jonathan did, which you'll love, probably. Or just buy it anyway. Don't download it illegally, okay?
Support the British film industry is what you got to do. Alright. Okay. Right. So that's it. Oddcast Podcast out.
Thank you for listening to the Oddcast Podcast UK. To find other shows like this, please visit podgodsnetwork.com. You won't be disappointed.